Okay, Mackenzie.
What up, Lamar?
We are covering Twisters with an S today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sequel, like,
whoa, let's
what'd
take
you drop?
It again.
No, natural disaster at your house. What did you drop?
I picked up my drink and the coaster like had suction to it and it fell, but it's like ceramic, so it just fell and cracked everywhere. So things are going great over here. Excuse me, one moment.
It's very, very fitting for the episode. I don't even think we need to re-record that. But my opening question to you was going to be of the natural disasters, because we were talking pre-ep, and I think this movie, there's a lot of natural disaster movies that have been made, and it almost feels like they sometimes make light of the reality of the situation. But I think this does a good job of grounding it somewhat in reality and consequence. So my question to you was going to be, when it comes to natural disasters, which one freaks you out the most? Like, is there one that scares you?
Dropping my cocktail, you know, like I should.
As far as personal consequences go, yeah, that's the worst thing that could happen.
Pretty fucking
rough.
Especially
for this podcast.
Truly. No. Okay. Sorry. Here I go making light of it. This is hard because I do feel like tornadoes are pretty fucking terrifying, you know? I mean, if you're in the thick of it. But I think for me, it would probably be fire. Like really bad wildfires, you know, like forest fires. I think one of the things I really struggle with is breathing issues. Like I have asthma. And so, and I noticed even when we don't have a local fire, like there's a fire in Canada, you know, that the smoke eventually travels down south. Mm-hmm. I like notice breathing issues even then, even when it's not right near me. So
that's crazy. That reminds me, was it last year or 2 years ago? Cause I have friends still in New Jersey and New York where there was that fire in Canada, but it resulted in that haze over all of New York and Jersey.
I think that was last year. And then, and we like sort of felt like, again, they just said the air quality, you know, went down, like that kind of thing. And so it wasn't, of course, nearly as significant or traumatic, but, the idea of that just getting worse and worse and being more and more oppressive and like not only, of course, the repercussions of everything burning, but like the ability to not breathe and kind of suffocating inside of a fire sounds pretty brutal, not to mention the devastation to the forest. That's always so heartbreaking to me. We had the Lost Pines out here in Texas is very close to most of us, our hearts, but especially mine, having grown up out there. We spent like every summer we were at Lost Pines Park all the time. And we had some very, very, very severe fires in the pines. Like we've had two really big ones over the last decade plus. And you go out there afterward and it's the devastation. Like there's just, for me at least, there's just nothing like it. It's heartbreaking to just see that the whole forest is gone. And so, yeah, probably wildfires. I think that's terrifying. What about you?
That's one that I didn't even think about, you know, when I think of natural fire and just how quickly it moves and whatnot. And yeah, we're going to a dark place on the pod today because I'm sitting here thinking about how like when a fire, I don't know if it's comforting or not that like a fire, like you would probably suffocate from the smoke inhalation before you burn to death. Those are your two options. You can suffocate or you can burn to death. And that's terrifying. For me, I guess living in Texas, tornadoes are probably the scariest just based on location, because earthquakes, for the most part, it's like, well, just don't live next to where there are fault lines. And, you know, no offense, Californians, but like, it's pretty much if you stay away from where that could happen.
Yeah.
But you want to know sort of an outlier that doesn't get mentioned, but I spent a good couple years being freaked out by because I went into a deep dive.
What?
Sinkholes. Like,
oh my God, yes. Those are fucking scary.
Could potentially open. Like there's a pocket.
And they have.
Empty space. Yeah. And they just swallow houses and roads and
cars.
I think I went down a rabbit hole on the internet looking at the, like it happened once. And of course I decided to research and look into it. And I spent probably 6 months or 12 months after that paranoid. And I would wake up at night and be like, did the ground just shake? Am I about to fall into a sinkhole? What would I do if I did? And it's like, you can't do anything. You're going to fall in and you're probably going to die. So
you're going to fall or you're not going to fall. Like, yeah, that's pretty sure. It's like the real world actual threat of quicksand. Like we always thought quicksand was going to be really bad when we were kids, and that's not real. But sinkholes, they don't fucking talk about, and that is an actual threat.
Yeah.
Oh
it's just one of those things. It's total chance. And I know that there's probably parts of the country where it happens more, like more, what's the word I'm looking for, where there's more moisture in the ground. Like, I think it's more common in Florida and things like that, as opposed to Texas. But the fact that it does feel kind of random is what scares me, is there's no safe place to go. Yeah, because I think
there's been some, like, in the Northeast, you know, like, they definitely happen anywhere. Yeah, wow. I love that we both brought one that was surprising and alarming. And on that note, let's continue.
It's gonna be a fun one.
Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm a tornado.
You know what? So, you are. We can just leave it at that. That's fine.
I am two drinks deep, because as we know, this is a back-to-back episode, so people watching this on video will notice we're wearing the same outfits. Yep. So yeah, at this point, I pretty much am.
I feel like I should have changed outfits, and then they wouldn't see behind the curtain. Anyway.
We should, from now on, like Lady Gaga-esque, just to throw people off the scent, you know?
It should just get more and more ridiculous as the drinks and the day goes on, I think. Like, let's just add more accoutrement.
Elton John numbers, lots of peacock sunglasses, feathers.
Yep, the whole thing. Okay, sorry. See, we're already going off the rails. What we're doing today is we're closing out our month of summer blockbusters with what I think is our more nostalgic of the blockbuster entries this year, Twisters. Twisters with an S.
Which is also, it's kind of like the sleeper. I mean, we know that it is a sequel to a semi-blockbuster from the 90s. I don't remember how much the original Twister made, but I feel like most of us that are millennials have seen the original Twister. And this one, compared to the others, I was actually surprised. This was kind of when we came up with the idea of let's do some blockbusters. Twisters was one that a lot of people threw out. And I was surprised by that, because I assumed a sequel to a 90s film that's a disaster movie probably wasn't going to be that great. But the more people that I spoke to about this before I saw it were like, dude, exceeded expectations. It was a blast. And I had the same experience, which we'll get to.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I was pumped about it when it came out, because I was like, I have a deep nostalgia for the OG, which is, well, again, we'll get into it, but I just think if you accept it for what it is, you can have a great time. So yeah,
Can I ask a second cold open question, even though we're past the intro at this point?
I'll allow it. Continue.
Have you ever seen it pass by this house and that house and then come straight for you? Yes or no?
Come for your house and your family. No, super haven't. I'm lucky to have not seen this IRL. See, we're keeping it light again. We're keeping it light. We didn't have a tornado experience. I think so. Speaking of the fuel that is perpetuating the situation, what is our drink today?
Well, our drink today is kind of a take on a dark and stormy, but we're going to sub bourbon in for the dark rum you usually use. So it's 2 ounces of bourbon, 3/4 ounces of ginger liqueur, 3/4 ounces of Aperol, which I was a little thrown by. I'm learning.
As you were putting it together and you were like, oh God.
Yeah. The more that I have these drinks, and Skylar is killing it in the drink game at Craft World. I'm realizing Aperol is just one of those things I don't love. Like, I think the bitterness sometimes overtakes some of the cocktail for me personally. It's like,
Trying to ease you into it. He's trying to work you in.
He's got his hand on my lower back. And he's like, it's okay. It might taste like pennies, but it's going to be great. So that's the only thing that throws me a little bit. But then 3/4 ounces of sweet and sour mix, which I didn't fuck up this time. I did make it fresh. Excellent. And then 1/2 ounce of either simple syrup, agave, whatever you got on board. But yeah, it goes down pretty much like a dark and stormy with bourbon substitute. And the Aperol makes it a little more bitter than sweet, but pretty tasty.
I personally love Aperol. You'll know you've made it with him if you get a Campari instead of an Aperol, or he starts making you Negronis. You're not there yet. He's not going to do it. I promise. Don't worry. I also riffed on mine a little bit, and I added a little blue curacao for color, because
Let's see that for the video, folks.
Well, I have to take a picture from the top and share on the Instagram, because I put it in a Moscow Mule glass that's already dark colored, but it is like a gray color, which is what I was going for. So cheers.
Well, cheers.
Which I can't really take credit for that. That was his idea as well. Sorry. Just to be clear. Okay. So we're going to attempt to blow through some basics as we never do and hit you at the top with the basic details of Twisters 2024. Important difference, right? This one was rated 6.8 out of 10 and 74% for critics, 91% for audience, which I think is quite strong.
Yeah.
And I did think, it's funny, I didn't do this for the last one, but I did think it would be interesting to compare to the first one. And the first one back in the day got a 6.5 out of 10. So very similar from IMDb. And on Rotten Tomatoes was 66% critics, but only 58% audiences. So I thought that was interesting because I feel like they have very similar vibes.
Yeah, we'll get to that of how this sort of mirrors the first in some ways, but then diverts from that a little, that formula a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious about that. I feel like films that came out prior to IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and all these rating sites, sometimes it gets a little bit skewed. Sometimes
yeah, I wonder if it's like people went back later and watched it, like they weren't of the time, as it were, and didn't, you know, have the experience when it came out. I don't know. Maybe that's what it was. I definitely saw it when it came out, so I was like, here for it. It was nostalgic for me. So,
and it could also be just sort of, I feel like disaster movies should be in a category of their own. Even when I spit out my rating in a second, like disaster movies are so hard to rate because at their core,
they're a disaster. I couldn't resist. Sorry. At their core, they're what? Sorry. Continue.
I think you pretty much nailed it. But it's like at your core, when you are focusing on sort of a tragedy of something that can happen in real life, but you're trying to tell the story of real characters, but not make it over the top and cheesy. Mm-hmm. It's this line to walk because I can't really put it into words, but disaster movie, unless it's Independence Day, where it's an alien invasion movie, but you see the White House blow up, you see all these natural mm-hmm. places being destroyed. There's a difference between that and something like Titanic or The Day After Tomorrow or 2012, any of those things where the focus is just on, we're going to destroy a bunch of stuff and make it look as real as possible, and we're going to try to weave this human emotional tie-in and see how well story. We walk the line.
Yeah. And usually it's a love story, I think, is the thing, which is true of the first Twister as well. Mm-hmm. But I think what is true about both of these is, like, that's not the actual main side story, you know? They don't try to focus on that too much. It's right. The point of this story is very different, which I think is fun. So mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, we'll get into that. But some basics real quick. We've got our director is Lee Isaac Chung, who has done some, if not all, I couldn't tell, of The Mandalorian, but also Minari, which I haven't seen yet, but was very well reviewed and highly recommended. The writers of this one are Mark L. Smith, who does the screenplay. You know him from probably The Revenant or The Midnight Sky. The Revenant, as you may recall, doesn't have a lot of words. So, you know, good for him.
Has at least one bear.
Has a bear, mm-hmm. has a handful of words. Good on him for writing more words this time. Joseph Kaczynski is one of the story authors here, and he did like The Dig and Oblivion, neither of which I have seen. So I don't know anything about him, really. And then we have Michael Crichton, who you all probably know from bookshelves everywhere. Lots of books this guy has written, as well as obviously this. This is based on his characters. But he's also done, you know, a ton of film as a result. But he's done screenplays for the films that he's written the source material for. But he did Westworld, Jurassic Park, obviously the first Twister. These are his characters. But he also did like some TV stuff, too. So he's was pretty well-rounded, RIP, and his wife helped contribute to these characters on the OG Twister as well, so she's credited to Anne-Marie Martin.
I had no idea he was tied to this. Like, I knew Michael Crichton from Jurassic Park, the prequel Triassic Park, the sequel mm-hmm. Mesozoic Park, but all the other stuff, like, I didn't know that he was tied to, I knew he was an author, but I didn't know he was also contributing to screenplays. That's kind of cool.
He's really prolific, to be honest. Like, if you go look at his stuff, I mean, and I was also surprised. I knew he was a prolific author, but I didn't realize like how involved he had gotten on the filmmaking side, and also the number of films and TV series that are based off his original source material. Like, I just didn't realize how much of it is based off of his material. So pretty interesting, I thought.
Yeah.
So our major cast and crew is leading us through this. All of this is Daisy Edgar-Jones playing Kate. she's been in a bunch of stuff recently. She did Where the Crawdads Sings, which I really liked. Very different character, wildly different character. She did Fresh, which is a weird as fuck movie if you've never seen it.
I still haven't seen it, but it's like kind of a horror movie or no?
Yeah, a little bit. It's, how would we describe this? It's like gore thriller?
Is it kind of like a body horror, like lots of gross out stuff, but not a lot of jump scares?
But it's funny because I attribute it more to thriller because like a lot of the gross gore stuff is more talked about than shown. Okay. If that makes sense. And I'm not giving anything away from the trailer. She's held captive and she's not alone in being held captive by this person. And a lot of what this person is doing is off camera. And it's a lot of like you talk. Think of it as V for Vendetta style. Do you remember how they were like in the cells and talking to each other? You mm-hmm. get more of that than you get the torture or the whatever is happening behind the scenes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting. Yeah. She also was in Under the Banner of Heaven, which I thought was really good too. It's a TV series, and then Normal People, which I didn't see, but looks interesting. So she's making the rounds and in some really different stuff too. So kind of cool. Also, Glenn Powell, who we have talked about on the pod, obviously is in fucking everything lately.
Isn't that Apollo 13 prequel or sequel? Prequel. Hidden Figures.
Sequel, prequel, all the things.
Don't you feel like when something is based in reality and it's kind of not a biopic, but what do we call it? Like a historical fiction or
historical fiction. Yeah.
Historical fiction. They should just be like, this is the prequel. They should just tie them together. Be like, this is the prequel to Apollo 13. It would make so much more money if they took an existing franchise and were like, it's a sequel, even though none of the cast is here.
Apollo 13, all the space movies would then be related though. Like all of them. Like, there's a lot of them. So anyway, but
they could just be like, oh, 1917. This is the prequel to Saving Private Ryan. Go, you like Saving Private Ryan? Go see this movie. It's the prequel.
Yeah. Anything before that is now becoming a prequel. Anything. I love it. But he's been in a bunch of stuff, like we said. But in case you didn't hear those other eps, he was in Hitman recently. He was in Top Gun Maverick. He was in Hidden Figures, which is the NASA movie we were just talking about. Anyone But You, on my personal favorite to reference because the name is so ridiculous, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which is a Netflix movie. And if you haven't seen it, it's pretty good.
Okay.
He's a romantic interest. Like, he's not the guy, but he's a romantic interest. And it has a ridiculous name, but it makes sense in the movie and it takes place during World War II. So it's kind of funny.
Some people are categorized. I mean, we've talked about before how he's just popping up in everything lately. He seems like the new It Man in Hollywood. He seems very likable. And I've seen him compared online to almost a Tom Cruise type where he's, you know, in this movie, he's smiling for 75% of the time he's on screen. He just seems like a likable
fucking chiseled jawline, man. Yeah.
So who's to say? A little bit of Cruise, a little bit of McConaughey, kind of a combination of the two.
I think that's kind of on the money. I mean, he's a native Austin Texanite. So us Austinites are very proud of him. And those of us who are attracted to men are super attracted to this man. So
I'm not even attracted to men, but him in that white t-shirt in the rain in this with the cowboy hat on, I was feeling some stuff.
Everybody feels, you question things. You know what I mean? You question your decision-making. Skylar, plug your ears. He's a gorgeous man. He's also super talented, but he's one of those. And somebody talked about this recently in a completely unrelated topic, but you know, he's not an overnight success. We're just all seeing this all of a sudden. It's just like anything. Anybody who's an overnight success has been hustling oftentimes for 10 years, 15 years. And he's done his time, and we're just now seeing him kind of, you know, get to get his flowers, which is cool. So Anthony Ramos is also in this. He plays Javi, who we have mixed feelings about at various points in this film. We'll get into it.
Oh, boy.
But he did In the Heights, which is a fun one. He also was in the original Hamilton, which
is by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, I mean, obviously, this is a musical. And if you haven't gotten to see it on Broadway, they do have the recorded version on Disney Plus if you want to actually watch the stage version.
There was a point where I probably could have recited like 60% of Hamilton just from watching it. I was, at the time, I was a theater teacher, so I would show the first head. You reach the last week of the year and it's like, we're not doing any
movie time.
We're just gonna watch Hamilton. So I watched the first hour and a half of Hamilton, you know, a dozen times in a 1 week span. So
that's a solid choice. I would have loved but also hated to be a theater teacher because I'm a theater kid, but you know. teaching children is, whew, bless you. God
did
bless
I tell you,
you
that I watched, I think you mentioned this, did I tell you I finally got around to watching Theater Camp?
No, you didn't tell me that.
Really enjoyable. I loved it so much. And you know what it reminded me of? Take a stab. It's an episode we've done.
Either I'd go Moonrise Kingdom or Wet Hot American Summer.
It's a combination of those two because my brain went to the absurdity of Wet Hot American Summer, but it's a much more family-friendly-ish vibe with like kids and stuff. But it was that same over the top. This is what theater kids are, but it's exaggerated to some capacity, but just feel good movie.
That's the energy. Yeah, for sure. I feel it reminds me of like, as far as the theater kid energy, it's like early Glee before it got problematic. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Then we also have Brandon Perea, who plays Boone, who we don't see a lot of, but he's like just kind of a fun character. I also like that he was in Nope and in the OA as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I honorable mention, she's not there a lot, but Maura Tierney is plays Mama Kathy, and she's been in obviously a ton of stuff that we have all probably heard. Of course, The Liar Liar is probably something that everybody hopefully knows, but she also recently was in The Iron Claw, which we covered, and she's in The Affair. She's like did that for years that she was in The Affair, which is on, I think it was Showtime. And it just went on so long, I couldn't keep watching it. But anyway, she was in that. She was really good.
We're going to get to this, but is it a spoiler in any way to say that Maura Tierney is, it wasn't Mama Cass. What did you say? Mama what?
I just said Mama Kathy, because her name's Kathy.
It's like Mama Cass. Yeah.
Mama Cass. Mama Kathy.
Mamas and the Papas. But
I mean, I didn't say whose mom she is. She's just a mom. She's a mama.
Okay. So maybe we cut this, but we're going to get to why that was a little
underwhelming. A little surprising. Yeah. Okay. And then I'm going to give you a quick plot summary. Also, are you proud of us? I'm proud of us. That was quick.
I'm always proud of us.
True that.
It doesn't matter if it's a good episode or a bad one. We talked about movies
with our work
while drunk for 90 minutes.
We did great.
Like, yeah, it's awesome.
Okay. Well, quick plot summary before we get into our spoiler-free ratings. Kate Carter, a retired tornado chaser and meteorologist, is persuaded to return to Oklahoma to work with a new team and new technologies. Oof. Accurate,
that's
succinct.
It. She just works with a new team and new technologies. That's the whole plot.
I mean, yeah. I feel like it covers the high points. We're gonna get into the spoilery bits. But before that, what was your rating?
So I think I said this last week during the closing. If you have not seen this in theaters, I would highly recommend trying to see this on a huge screen rather than waiting for it to be streaming, because I loved the experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I had waited to watch it on my TV, if it would have been the same outcome. Right.
Yeah.
Because visually, just spectacular. I think when this movie focuses on being a disaster movie, it is really close to a 10 out of 10 for that genre.
Yeah.
It mixes in some slower stuff and it doesn't all land, which drops it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But seriously, go see this in theaters. Overall, for what it is, I'd probably give this like 8, 8.5. It's really fucking good.
Yeah, we're on the money there in the same range, 8, 8.5. I agree. I think it's a good fucking time. And I totally agree that you got to go see it on a big screen. I wish, and we had talked about this on text, as you know, I wish that we had gone and seen it in IMAX or something like that, like that we had just been able to plan it better and we didn't get a chance to. But it is so visually stunning and interesting. And, you know, yes, of course, there's CGI in every film these days, but I feel like they do it very well. And it's also, I don't feel like it's overdone in that it is situational. It makes sense for the context. So yeah, definitely plus one to going to see it in a theater if you can.
Yeah, I told Janelle, I said, this might be the best disaster movie of the last two decades. Like, if you want to include things like Armageddon, which is technically a disaster movie, but it involves outer space and there's people going,
that's a little bit more sci-fi, right? I feel like,
Don't Look Up, I guess. But this one, just, I don't know what else aside from Titanic, like, because I didn't really love 2012, I didn't love The Day After Tomorrow, didn't love San Andreas. Like, there's a lot of this just stands out as being really fucking good.
I think so too. And I also, I'm not a big disaster movie person, but I would agree with like the one, I didn't see San Andreas, but I also didn't love Day After Tomorrow. You know, like I just don't think it resonates the same way. And I agree. I think Armageddon's a little bit more sci-fi. So in this very niche space, I think it knocks it out of the park. Yeah. And if you liked the first one, again, in spoiler free zone, I think if you liked the first one, you will like this one.
Absolutely. Because
it's a similar energy vibe, you know, formula-ish, but they do modernize it in, I think, important key ways that really resonate. So go see it.
If you liked the first one, or if you liked the ride at Universal Studios, did you ever go on the Twister like ride?
No,
quote unquote?
I didn't.
I went and saw this at the Alamo Drafthouse. And if you've never been to an Alamo Drafthouse, you know, at most movie theaters chains, you go to the 30 minutes before the movie starts, they're showing you trivia and different things, commercials and stuff. At Drafthouse, they sort of cobble together YouTube clips and random references mm-hmm. that tie into the movie. And it's very much worth showing up 30 minutes early to the film. But they showed a guy from Universal in, like, I don't know, 1997. Mm-hmm. He's talking about the Twister ride that they had just built and how you're basically standing on a soundstage and watching a tornado approach, and they have like these wind turbines in there. And I remember, I think I've ridden it, quote unquote, because you're basically just standing there, but you do feel everything in the rain and the wind, and you see all the chaos happening. But I really fucking enjoyed that. And it was such a throwback to see that clip prior to the movie starting. So if you like that amusement park ride, go see this film.
Do you know what that reminds me of really quick? I feel like that's maybe like a, maybe that was the inspiration. I don't know which one came first, chicken and egg, but like an iFly moment. You know how they like stick
like
you in like
skydiving?
They stick you in like the little tunnel and then you like fly up. Like, isn't that kind of what would actually happen in a tornado, right? You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, go check out iFly. Maybe that'll feel the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So, okay, one quick production note too that I would say. This had a. There was quite a documented wide range on this budget, maybe not to Hollywood, but to me, it was $155 million to $200 million. And I'm like, you have a solid 45 mil swing there, but okay. Hmm. But yeah, somewhere in that range. And yesterday when I checked those earnings, it was $315 million. And when I double checked it this morning to make sure I had gotten the right numbers, it was $316.6 million. So still going strong. We'll see if that goes up.
Money laundering going on or whatever. What studio released this? Like no, actually, it cost us $500 million.
I know. I'm like, did you give a range? Because you're like waiting to finalize the books. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. But anyway, it's doing well is the point against its budget. Not as well as some of these other ones we've talked about. But I mean, man, I think it went up against some heavy hitters this year for blockbusters too. Yeah. So it's been a strong summer, I would say. Post-COVID, this is probably the most notable summer of blockbusters,
I would agree with that 100%, and I think it's almost a quality over quantity thing as well. I feel like coming out of COVID, there was such a push to, we got to get back on track, let's fucking force out everything, and in years past, prior to COVID, it felt like every weekend there was one to two new releases that were considered blockbusters. And now we've sort of settled into this new thing where there's one or two a month. And those are really the ones you have to see. And the rest you're waiting for streaming for the most part. But yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. And I think like we've gotten back to some of the action-y blockbusters, and that's what's drawing people back, versus before it was like, in some cases, it was rom-com-y or drama or thriller or whatever, which are, of course, interesting movies. And I love seeing everything in a theater personally. But you can watch at home and have a similar experience, you know, versus in a theater, you have some of these action flicks, like you just have to see them in theater. Like Top Gun Maverick is another great example of like, if you didn't see that in theaters, it's a radically different experience, right? So,
or like Jungle Cruise with The Rock. If you guys didn't miss that in theaters, don't even bother watching it.
Don't even bother. It's not worth it. Just stay home, you know, whatever. Okay, so we're going to go into spoiler zone, which I realize I didn't give this warning last time. If you haven't seen the movie, turn around. Don't drown. It's spoiler time. So, okay, I'm going to blow through some of the plot points that get us rolling, and then we're going to just kind of talk about how we feel about things, I think, on the whole. And then, if you're a nerd and want to stick around, I have some nerdy comparison factoids for you. And I cannot wait.
We're going to talk about the plot for like 20 minutes, and then the last 30 minutes of the pod will be spent on nerd shit. So.
Yes, I did so much research for you guys, and I had the best time. I'm so excited. Anyway, so to start us off, Kate, who we mentioned, is in, you know, her and her homies are in their youth in a meteorology program, and they have some kind of grant money, seems like, maybe not a lot, but they're in a heavy-duty meteorology program that utilizes Dorothy from the first film. So you can tell, like, this is that legacy coming through of this thing is still being used, but the funding has dried up a little bit. She's a little bit worse for the wear, but they are still trying to innovate and iterate on this science that we saw from the first film. And what I noted right away was these kids are doing some fucking hardcore work with no supervision. Where is the professor? Where is the adult in the room? Like, they are just, they're literally chasing tornadoes and not an adult in sight. I mean, I know they're technically legally adults, but like, don't they need somebody to watch them? No, nobody's watching them.
Yeah, this intro, I think I was surprised at how surprised I was by how things played out, because after
you're like, this makes perfect sense, but also what?
Well, to me, it was after seeing the original and knowing that it starts with Helen Hunt as a child and her father is killed by a tornado, right? That's how the entire premise of the film. And then it goes in. I didn't piece together that, hey, this is probably going to start with a tragedy. And that's exactly what happens. But I thought that this film, I had already said it once before, it takes the original and makes you think you're following it beat for beat, but it switches a couple things up.
Yeah,
and this film actually did a really good job in the first 5 minutes of making me think these are going to be our main cast. Now, granted, I hadn't watched any of the trailers really for this, so I don't know how prominently they were featured. But they had a throwaway line where one of the characters says, oh, you got struck by lightning and survived and you're still being so paranoid, blah, blah, blah. And that's such a simple thing. But to give that character a backstory makes you assume, okay, this is going to play out in this way 45 minutes from now. So for them to be just unceremoniously knocked off by this tornado in the first 10 minutes is bonkers.
Yeah, you get invested in them and you assume you will be with them for a little while.
Right.
And unlike the first one, you're super not. You know, the only one you get to stay with is Kate, and it completely informs what she does from then on. So, I mean, again, high level, they're chasing this tornado. They can't stop this tornado with this chemical mixture that she has.
Diapers.
They're
like, let's throw a bunch of diapers. It's a very typical college student thought. We're going to change the world.
Just wrap it around the tornado. It'll be fine. Yeah. But they conduct this experiment to make the tornado disappear. Doesn't work. If anything, it seems to make it bigger. Turns into an EF5, which it was not anticipated to be. And they all have to escape. And they don't want to go to an overpass, but it's the only option available to them at that point. And then basically everyone proceeds to die except for Kate. And so you, like you said, you go through this immediate trauma in the first 10 minutes. And I agree with you. You feel like, whoa, like I didn't expect this to happen immediately. Like I thought something traumatic was going to happen, but I didn't think it would be immediate. So I think it's a good way to like reset expectations of the story right at the top. And she goes, we jump to 5 years later. She's a meteorologist and she's working full time out of the field, and she's working for NOAA, which if you don't know is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the US. And she's a meteorologist for them. And you can tell she still has these like killer instincts. So they still defer to her about her tornado knowledge, but she is like very comfortably, I'm going to stay in a fucking office. Thank you so much. Everybody I know died. And it seems like she feels deeply responsible for that, because this was her formula. This was her idea.
And just for the record, when Javi shows up to convince her to come back to Oklahoma for this wave of storms that are happening to help him and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get what he's going for. But like, if a friend of yours, take away the entire trauma of it all, if they are working in New York City and able to afford rent in New York City, they don't want to fucking go back to Oklahoma, like give up their job, their life there to go chase tornadoes. I don't give a shit about the people, not that I don't give a shit about the people that died, but like that, take that entirely out of it.
Right.
She doesn't want to go back to Oklahoma with you. And it's fucked up that he's like, yeah, just give up this great life you got in NYC. Come back with me.
And his compromise is, wait, just come back for a week. And she's like, what? I'm going to use my PTO for this bullshit to go back to Oklahoma. Yeah, that feels like one of the most unrealistic moments in the film. I totally agree.
But they don't even let you have Airbnbs in New York City. It's like against the law. I've learned that because I'm looking for hotels in New York now. So like, she can't even Airbnb her place for that week. She's missing out on all that money.
No, she can't. Housing shortages. They need to do that in Spain. Anyway, different conversation. But yeah, I think what's interesting about that conversation, though, is that he totally guilts her kind of into coming back and essentially leverages. And I think what is not a great way that she sort of owes that to the legacy of these people who died. Like, he very much puts that pressure on her of like, why would you give up on this? Like, the only way to help them and to avenge them and to some degree, and he doesn't say this way, but he's implying it, is to come back and do this work with us for Stormpar. And he ultimately gets her. She says no, but he ultimately gets her by sending her a story about another tornado that has torn through Oklahoma and has killed more people. And it does really, you know, tug at her heartstrings and gets her to say, you know what? I'll come back for a week. Like, I'll come help you for a week and we can see if we make this work.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get into the complexity of Javi and his different wrinkles in his character. But like you saying of he's kind of like skeevy in the way that he gets her to come back. And I think that does have an eventual payoff later in the film when he sort of goes off on her and she talks about losing everything. And it basically underlying everything in this initial approach is the fact that he still kind of blames her, it seems like, for losing three of his closest friends.
Yeah. And I think like we could get into, is it fair to blame her? Is it not? You know, it was an experiment that they all agreed to. You all agreed to chasing a tornado. Like, I don't think there's any universe in which you could say that this person should not feel guilty. I'm not saying that. But should she feel responsible? Like, those are different things. You know, you can feel deeply guilty about the way something happened and played out and feel like you wish it had been different or that you could have done something different or that you had just made a different decision. But every single one of them there made a decision to chase this fucking tornado and co-signed this experiment, right?
Right.
And the nature of science is that it doesn't always work. And it unfortunately didn't, and people died. And is she responsible for everybody's choices to go take this risk together? And I just hard disagree that she is responsible. And that's why I don't like the way he handles it, because it's like, I know you have an emotional connection to this. And that's, we also have to give him grace with that of he has an emotional response to this, but he's just seeking to blame somebody for something that is literally a disaster. It's a force of nature, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a product of, and we talked about this during our Fall Guy episode, of when you're at an age of sort of feeling invincible. And I think we all go through that when you're between like 10 and 30. It's a good couple decades where you're like, nothing can hurt me. I'm going to live forever.
I'm never going to die. Yeah.
And I think it's a product of that, because I wrote down in my notes here at the beginning, these kids are having too much fun.
They are
too lighthearted for the fact that there is a natural disaster occurring right here. And they're just like, yeah, we're having a great time.
Lamar's about to turn the corner of 40 and he's going full curmudgeon. These kids, these young whippersnappers having too much fun.
Should have never went near that tornado, I tell you. But yeah, so I did write that down. I also wrote down these two female characters, at least in the first 5 minutes, seem very similar. I'm like, they're both kind of like the pixie-ish. Like, I was like, really? This is the way we're going? And no, it turns out we're not, because only one of them is going to make it out of this. So,
yeah. And I like that she ends up being quite different. You know, she's not quite what you expect in the first 10 minutes, I think. You know, but it's this experience that sobers her. Because to your point, I agree. They're all having way too much fun and maybe not taking seriously, to your point, that this is a life threatening endeavor that they're embarking on. And it takes people dying around her for her to realize the severity of it, which you would think she would get a little bit better having grown up in this situation and understanding this deeply. But it had to directly impact her for her to really see it, I think, through different eyes, through different lens.
Yeah, I wrote down that the reason this movie is awesome isn't just because of cool visual effects and the look of it on a big screen, but I do really think they nailed it as far as Kate's character development. Say what you want. There's some parts that are a little cheesy in this and eye-rolly across the board. But I think that Kate, over the course of the film, everything feels earned. And you see what she believes in. And then eventually we'll get to the ending and how that plays out. But that's one thing that I think this film does really well, is a strong female protagonist who every moment doesn't feel dependent on anything except for her own story.
100%. And I think, to your point, she has real growth and maturity that happens over the course of this story. But her core of what she cares about, her core values don't change. She doesn't radically shift. Right. And I love that reflection on, there was nothing wrong with who she was at 19 and 20 trying to do these experiments. There was nothing fundamentally wrong with her. She just had lessons that she had to learn. You know, and now she's grown from those things, and she's the same person, but smarter, more mature, and more compassionate, and more sensitive about the severity of the situation. And I love that it's not a like, hey, we needed to flip the switch on who this person is. She right. just is going to evolve a bit. And that's, I think, most people's stories, right? You know?
Yeah. I think we have spent the appropriate amount of time on how awesome the protagonist female storyteller or storytelling is here. Can we talk about Glenn Powell now?
I've been waiting my whole life to talk about Glenn Powell for the rest of this podcast.
No, it's not that I want him to kiss me on my mouth. It's just that if I were sitting at a bar and he walked up to me and said, do you want to dance? I would probably say yes. So I would like to talk about Glenn Powell right now. Yes.
100%. We want to start with the t-shirt scene, or what do we? No, sorry. We'll go in order. Okay. So he's number one, fucking gorgeous. Let's get that out of the way. Number two, he is immediately not necessarily likable. And I like that about this story and about this use of him, because one, we've established he's gorgeous and you anticipate that he's going to be the hero of this story. But right. the way you are presented to him, the tornado wrangler, is that he is high risk, daredevil type of guy who doesn't take this seriously. And she, by comparison, they are foils to each other in the situation. If she is very, again, sobered by her experience and what has happened to her, and she's much more conservative in her approach to this, versus he is like, let's fucking go. Let's literally drive into the tornado. Let's drill the truck into the fucking ground. And you look at him as like a little risky and a little bit of a fame whore. To be honest,
it's very much when I was talking about thinking I knew how this would play out beat by beat based on the original film. It's very much the Cary Elwes character from the first one. He's a rival who's up against our main characters. You think you know, okay, well, he's going to be the asshole this whole movie, and he's going to die at the end. And that, I love that they flip it on its head like 45 minutes in.
Yeah, I love that they did keep, to your point, yes, exactly, some of the same core formulas, parallels, but they change who is who, is really what it comes down to. Yep. In this case, Cary Elwes, his character is Scott, who gives the super ick from day one. And also, by the way, sidebar, he's supposed to be the new Superman, and I am not excited. Anyway, continue.
Cary Elwes?
No, the guy who plays Scott.
We're going to put Robin Hood men in tights.
Can you imagine? I want to leave that in because I need everyone to have that visual.
But like, so the other thing that I wanted to add there was I had written down in my head of like, the coolest twist in this film is that it turns out that the people driving around in a pickup truck, blasting Kid Rock music and shooting off fireworks, they're the good guys. Like, they're the nice guys in this movie versus the gentle, hungover, nice guy Puerto Rican from the beginning. He's actually kind of a fucking dick. And I could say that I'm Puerto Rican. But I loved that twist of like, dude, he's kind of just this guy kind of pining for our main heroine. And then when he finds out that she's not really into him, he just drops her and it's fucked up.
Yeah. And I think like, again, I mean, to your point, it turns the characters on their head, who is bad, who is whatever. Mm-hmm. But also he has with him a journalist. And I think that really contributes to your assumption that the tornado wrangler is going to be fame seeking out of all of this, like that he is just kind of a fame whore. And you come to find out over the course of the film that like his intentions are not exactly that. But you also learn about Javi, who presents this to Kate as this philanthropic endeavor, that
right.
these grants and this money are coming from a for-profit company, for-profit entity, and that this is not in service of anyone. And what you learn is that he's made some compromises to get the money that he needs for the science he thinks is important. And he's made some ethical compromises in that process. And you also see that his business partner, Scott, doesn't see any of it as an ethical right. compromise. And it takes her like kind of going through this process of, you know, they're running into these tornadoes. They're running into these people alive. She has a really severe anxiety attack when they first go after the first tornado. She can't do it, you know. And she learns after the devastation of some of those tornadoes that the tornado wranglers are trying to take care of people in the aftermath. You know, they're all that merch they were selling, all that, you know, publication they were doing was to fundraise and get donations so that they could help give aid to these folks after the fact versus Storm Parr is benefiting this Marshall Riggs character who is a tornado profiteer. Who is going after these folks' property after the fact, where they're going to have a very hard time recovering from these tornadoes. And he's just going to buy that land on the cheap.
Okay, so we're back. And if you guys did hear a faint ice cream truck in the background of the last 60 seconds or so, I apologize.
We had to take a little time out.
There is no ice cream to be found. But I wanted to follow up. You were talking about Marshall Riggs, the character yeah. who's sort of...
a tornado profiteer.
Yeah, buying the land of these folks who have just lost everything and sort of taking advantage of it. Now, I understood the necessity of that character and how it ties into Javi's character and the complications there. But I think I found myself overthinking it because in my head I was like, wait, is he buying the land in hopes that Javi can get Kate to solve tornadoes, essentially, like get rid of them? So he's snatching up all this land, then there's going to be no natural disasters here and it's going to be worth a lot more. But you said that's not your reaction. But in my head, I think that kind of overcomplicated the plot a little bit yeah. in my eyes.
I think so. I think it's a much simpler thing. This is a greedy guy who wants to get land on the cheap, you know, and he very much gave me the vibes of a personal injury lawyer from Texas. And I literally just had to drive to Dallas and back for work, actually, this last week.
How many billboards did you see?
And so many fucking billboards of this type of person, this type of guy with the cowboy hat and the bolo hat. And fun fact, there was also one where a bunch of ER workers had cowboy hats. Like, just so extra. It was so weird. And
that's not part of the uniform in Texas, that if you work in the ER, you have to wear a cowboy hat.
You're so not Texan, it hurts.
They sterilize sometimes. Them first. You're
allowed. They put a little plastic over him. It's a whole thing. No. Yeah. He just gives me like, yeah, creepy, cheesy personal injury lawyer vibes of I'm going to be an ambulance chaser. And in this case, he's doing it to profit off of these people's pain. And Javi justifies this as a way to solve. I think for him, it is as complicated as you said, right? Of I want the science to solve for this. And then Marshall Riggs is a means to an end.
He's the money.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just the money. He's a means to an end. He helps me solve this problem. Maybe I make a few compromises along the way, but I get ultimately to a point where we are not in this position anymore. There's no more devastation for him to go run after and get cheap land from. I just am going to help people. I think Javi in his core is telling himself that he is trying to help people, but he's doing it in a complicated way. Yeah. He thinks the ends justify the means. And I think what she is telling him and we as the audience are reacting to is that the ends don't justify the means, you know, and you shouldn't be associated with somebody like this. And it's really, you know, it's something that really disappoints her in him and comes to a head after kind of one of my favorite scenes where they went out to the rodeo. And as soon as they went to the rodeo,
this is
I was
like a horror movie because the tornadoes are just chasing them everywhere.
I was like, girlfriend, as soon as I saw the rodeo that they were like, do you want to go to the rodeo? I was like, okay, cue tornado in 5, 4, 3, 2. And it's totally fine that you kind of know that that's what's coming. It is totally fine. It still hits because the effects and the visuals, like you said, it is a spectacle. And she kind of gives this homage a bit to the first one, like hiding in the pool, like going underground as much as you can. And you get a similar moment where a guy like flies away, you know, into the tornado. So
it's very much like the set piece of the first. It reminds me in the first one of when they're at the drive-in movie theater and a tornado mm-hmm. comes and yeah. like wrecks shop there. That's again, it's following some scene, of the beats. Basically. Yeah, yeah.
And it's, but it's, but like you said, it's following some of the beats, but it's doing it in a, it's not a copy paste, you mm-hmm. know? So it feels a different enough that you're still interested to watch it. But then they have their big, you know, they have their big conflict, their big point of conflict coming out of that, because these people, you know, have all been devastated by this, and boom, here are these people on the scene immediately trying to take advantage. Right. And she's super disappointed in that. And she steals his car, steals his truck, which, you know, I guess, fuck it. Why she not? Does.
Yeah.
And goes home to Mama, who is Mama Kathy.
Not Helen Hunt.
He goes home to Mama, who is Maura Tierney's character, Mama Kathy, in Sepulpa, Oklahoma. Yeah.
So I, on this podcast, it's very interesting to do a podcast because you're not used to having every word you say recorded and put out to the world. And I have certainly said, and we've called it out, things that I, words that I thought would never come out of my mouth. And we're about to have a few more, which is, I had blue balls for Helen Hunt. I had built up in my head that, oh, they had the Dorothy tease at the beginning. This girl doesn't want to tell people her last name. We keep mentioning her mom on the phone, but we never see her. Clearly, this is going to be Helen Hunt. They even do a fucking reveal when she gets to the house. She's like, Mom, I'm home. And the mom approaches from the shadows as if it's supposed to be Helen Hunt. And I think Helen Hunt didn't get the memo to show up to record that day, because instead, and she does a great performance, but I was just so disappointed, to be honest.
I'm sorry. I'm still way back at the blue balls for Helen Hunt. Like, I'm still recovering. Sorry, let me catch up. Yes, I agree with you. I very much think it was a bait and switch. I totally agree. I think it was like, we want you to think this is going to be what you think it is, but it's not. And I, again, I like that. I like that they're like, because listen, this isn't only Joe's story, right? Like, this isn't only Helen Hunt's story. This is a story that is in this region, pervasive in these communities. There are tons of people who have been impacted by this. There are tons of people who have been impacted by tornadoes specifically. And so I think it's good to actually broaden that scope a bit and go, it wasn't just Bill, it wasn't just Joe, it was countless families that were changed by this while also being an homage to the first one. And they even tell that story. Like, she tells Glenn Powell's character, Tyler, that, you know, she knew that this was Kate's calling when she was a little girl and ran out naked in the storm to stare at the tornado, which is a direct homage to the story they don't show but tell in the first one about how Bill Paxton was a crazy son of a bitch and went and screamed at the tornado butt naked. Mm-hmm. So I think it holds the spirit of the first film of, these are the same kinds of people, but they're different people, and different people in this community have all been impacted by this story. But I agree. They wanted you to think it was going to be Joe and Helen.
It just, all the hints that I mentioned, I don't want to repeat it, but it just feels like they wrote it assuming that they could get Helen Hunt, and they saved it for like the last day of filming of, we're going to get all these shots on the farm of wherever Kate grew up. And then it turned out we couldn't get Helen Hunt, so we just replaced it with Maura Tierney. Like, that's how it feels when you watch it. It mm-hmm. just feels like they would not have left so many hints earlier in the film if it was going to play out this way.
If I'm being honest, just because of my deep cynicism about not only Hollywood, but audiences, I think they made the conscious choice to not get Helen Hunt, because I think if you see her now, she's an incredible actress, and she has and always will be a beautiful woman. She just looks very different now. And I do not mean that in a disparaging way.
You just think audiences wouldn't recognize her?
I think they wouldn't recognize her. That's, I think, fair. They would not quite connect the dots, and or might assume negative things, like say negative things. I think it might detract from the story if they had gotten Helen Hunt. So I think it was actually like really intentional. To be
fair. I read something, and granted, when I say I read something, I mean, I saw this in a Reddit thread. I don't have an official source here, but I had read something that apparently Helen Hunt had actually written a potential sequel Twister and pitched it to the studio, and they were like, no, we're not, we're gonna pass on this.
Not real mom.
So maybe that's why they couldn't get her back. Again, can't confirm that. That's just something that I saw in passing.
Maybe it's combo of all of the above. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, even if you don't get the same movie you want made 10 years ago, maybe she would have been willing to come back. Who knows? But again, I think actually they've made it work for them where it's like, this just feels like a way to change this formula in a really good way. I do think it's really weird though, that Tyler just fucking shows up. Like, I'm glad it works out. And he's like a beautiful, gorgeous man. And we get to see him walk through the rain in a white t-shirt. And like, I could play that on a loop, you know, but still he just kind of creepy followed her.
Like, I was gonna say, thank goodness that Glenn Powell is a 10 out of 10, because if a 6 showed up at my barn and said, yeah, people said this is where you live, so you might be hanging out here, I don't think I'd be as receptive and ask him to stay for dinner. Just saying.
No, I also like that she doesn't want him to stay for dinner, and it's like a typical mom vibe of like, he's staying, you're staying. And I like the matchmaking moment of all of that. It's cute, but yeah, it also feels distinctly Southern and accurate, that she would not be allowing him to leave. So
you're almost 26 years old and you're still not married.
Yeah, 100%. Like, girl, a man who looks like that, by the way, just showed up. We're cashing in, you know? Yeah. So, but I do like that they immediately go into the science again in the barn. Like, her barn has been, you know, it has been preserved in its original form. She has all of her notes and photos and all these things. And you can tell there's some pain associated with that. Obviously there couldn't not be. But it gets the wheels turning, and Tyler is the person who reaffirms in her, I think, the validity of her premise, of her hypothesis, right? He's like, listen, you are on the right track. It's okay. Like, and it's also okay to have this crisis of, oh my God, what have I done? But come back to the drawing board. And I like this moment where she's gotten some time away from it. She's maybe healed. And with the help of this person who she's learned has really good intentions, they can get creative and they can go back to the drawing board and try to figure out how to solve this.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they both have the same objective, which is to sort of save lives and help people who are impacted by this, which at the beginning, I was a little thrown by that because I didn't understand the conflict in the first half hour where Tyler's team is shooting YouTube videos and shooting fireworks and chasing the storm. And Kate's team, Javi's team, is trying to track the storm for scientific purposes. But if they're competing, and I'm like, you both have two different outcomes. Why do you give a shit? Why are you cutting each other off and trying to like run each other off the road when you're not competing over the same thing? That threw me. So when they eventually tie their goals together, I went, oh, okay, that's where we're going with this.
Yeah. And I think she thinks about it a little bit differently than she was before. I think she was like, this is impossible, this made it worse, so on and so forth. But now with this like second set of eyes, it makes sense. And he's like, well, if we add silver iodide, obviously.
Duh.
We have these polyacrylate beads that are great, but like, that's just step one, bring in the silver iodide. And you're just sitting there going like, yeah, sure, checks out. And they go and they start to build out this new solution and this truck full of this silver iodide that's going to supposedly help dissipate this storm. But then, of course, as is the way, another tornado shows up, because why not? As is tradition. And they have to go kind of like help rescue this town that's directly in the pathway, hasn't had enough warning, all these things. And this is where you see a real divergence of priorities for Javi, for Kate and Tyler, and all of that. And like the climax begins to ensue.
And I'm sure we're going to talk about, like, I absolutely want to talk about how the climax plays out of who does what. But my first question that I was confused when I was watching was, we have a truck full of supplies that are meant to help dissipate this tornado. But instead of trying to dissipate the tornado, we're driving to the town to help the people that are going to get hit by the tornado. And eventually it plays out where Kate decides to go try and use their science on it. But I was like, why didn't we just use the science when it was 20 miles away from the city?
It's been like a month for me since I saw it, so I'm trying to remember exactly. But I feel like it was something along the lines of, it was already too big. And she thought
the materials wouldn't be strong
enough. Wouldn't be strong enough for that particular size of the tornado. I feel like that's what it was. And then as they realize, so they, again, they go to this town to try and rescue people. And I love this moment before we get quite to the tornado of she gets to be the heroine to Tyler of like this big piece of metal falls on him and mm-hmm. she's trying to save him and not the other way around. I think that's an important shakeup yeah. of roles. And obviously Javi shows up and helps because he has come to his senses and realized that Scott and Co are terrible. And he's dumped Scott literally on the
side
of the
road. And he realizes Glenn Powell's really good looking. So maybe like a threesome could be in the cards right. one day.
And
like,
if he comes and lifts the metal off of him, he's going to be yeah. eternally grateful.
He's like, okay, so she's never going to love me, but Glenn yeah. Powell's pretty handsome.
Exactly. So I think it all comes together. It's ripe for a threesome. Twister's three, y'all. But no, she saves him. And then they basically evacuate to this theater that is incapable of really protecting
these people. It was built in 1862 before movies existed.
Right. Like, it's not prepared. They're trying to harness themselves to, like, theater chairs. It's I mean, they are evading to the best of their ability, but they're literally losing people in the process. And she comes to realize that, like, she's got to save the day. And I, again, I love that moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where she's like, also, you know what? Deuce, I got to go do this.
I laughed because in the theater, not unintentionally, but it's something unintentional, because they're in this movie theater. There is a film on the screen. And eventually there's this incredible shot of the wall being torn down behind the movie screen. And you see the tornado approaching in mm-hmm, the background. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful shot.
Very cool shot.
But yeah. because of the way the scene is staged, it makes it look like as the roof is collapsing and all these terrible things are happening, all the main characters are still trying to watch the movie that's on the screen. So it's cutting back and
like,
forth.
Oh God, I really like this movie. Like,
wait, what's happening? I don't want to miss the plot. It's very funny to watch that in real time. But yeah, to your point, she realizes, hey, I've got to do this. And I just thought, you know, she does rescue Tyler. And the fact that I kept expecting Tyler to come out of the theater, jump in the car with her to go save the day. But I love that they just have her go kick some ass.
Yeah, I love it too. Because you do. I think you agree, like, it makes sense that they have sort of become a duo now. So and it becomes a little bit of their experiment because he's now contributed. And so it wouldn't be outlandish for him and her to do this together. Right. But I think it's very much this redemption arc for her too, of she is the only one who has done both experiments and has to try again, you know? Yeah. And so she just literally drives herself into the storm. She, you know, barrels down on this tornado and she, you know, explodes this stuff into the tornado, and it's not without issue. The truck turns on its side. It's a whole thing. But it works. The concept works. And she is able to save these people that you just knew without her even trying, we're not going to make it. That was the crux of the story.
Agreed. And filmmakers out there, writers out there, this is how you do feminism right. This is the way that you take a female protagonist and tell their story over 90 minutes and have them be the main character and the hero. It does not feel forced. When she's sitting in the truck and she experiences that moment of terror of, I've done everything I can do. And I think there's some close-up shot of her just kind of putting her hands on her thighs, of just like settling herself and steadying her hands of, I've done everything I can do. Whatever happens, happens at this point. Like, mm-hmm. that is how you tell a strong female story. And it doesn't feel like this crazy forced narrative. It makes so much logical sense. And it was just super cool to see.
I think it was very much a natural progression for her. And in a way that you're like, she's reaching the moment she's always wanted to reach. This is an important moment for her to try and achieve. And again, she's realizing there's no other option here. You know, yeah. we're gonna die either way. So this is what I have to do. And this is like a super duper tornado, by the way. This is not no bullshit tornado. This is a giant tornado that has now caught on fire because of an oil refinery. So she's
can we Chekhov's oil refinery that we see at the beginning of the movie? Oh, and I'm like, well, that's gotta come in. And 100%. Fuck, are the visual effects on that incredible? When the fire is swirling up through the tornado, this, you know, we've talked about spectacle and the visual effects in this take full advantage of modern day technology of just like, shit, that's what lightning would look like. That's what fire would look like. All fireworks inside a volcano. Yeah, that does look mm-hmm. pretty neat.
It does. It looks super cool. And don't worry, we did some recon for you guys on the science there. So we'll come back to that. But all that to say, you know, she saves the day. Then, you know, the denouement of it all is that she's going to go home to New York and try to get some funding and make sure that, you know, they can continue their research, they can propagate this solution, so on and so forth. And of course, he shows up at the airport, because how could he not? But I love that this is, again, an upending on your typical like rom-com run through the airport scene. It's, you know, he's not running after her per se. And, you know, he's just, they have their weird little standoff and you can feel vibes.
I wrote down that it's, you know, unfortunately, this is tied to a really negative event. But prior to 2001, when you were doing a rom-com, it was, I'm going to chase you through the airport, I'm going to get to your gate, or I'm going to get on the plane and like, and give you a speech.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So they have to have her, Kate, awkwardly stand and look at the flights like she doesn't know which gate she's going to.
Yeah.
So she's just awkwardly paused there for Glenn, or for Glenn Powell to come in and like talk to her. Yeah.
But we can't overlook the fact that he has drilled his truck into the drive of the airport, where he's getting yelled at, of course, by an
Paul
airport
yeah.
Yeah, parking attendant who's like, get the fuck out of here. And he's like, you know what? Try to tow me now, bitch. I weirdly loved that. I was like, fuck yeah, don't get your car towed. But he goes in there. And then, of course, the flight is delayed because welcome to 2024, but also because of a storm. And they just run out to storm chase. And I love that of like, they're just going to get back to business. You know, I can't make this flight. Like, fine, I'll get back to business.
And I like that we know that there is romantic interest there. But yeah. We've never we don't, again, it's like a show don't tell, or like, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, there are vibes.
We don't need a kiss. We don't need that. It's just, these are two really cool characters who obviously have a vibe, who's to say what happens after this, but we don't need them to like kiss in the last scene before we go to credits.
No, you don't need that. Like, it's not going to have the same, it's not going to pay off the way you think it is, I don't think.
And I think they did actually, I read that they recorded that. They actually did have that in the script. They shot it, but they were like, let's just leave it out. And I think it's better because of it.
Yeah. A few call outs I want to make before we get into the nerd stuff is that I have some slight complaints, but mostly just observations. One observation that's not really a complaint is I love that Glenn comes to the point of, he's like, well, she's your story. To the journalist, he's accepted that this is really about Kate's evolution and her science and what she's determined is going to be a really good life-saving endeavor. And I love that he's kind of like, yeah, I know, like, I've moved on, LOL. So I like that. But one thing that does bug me throughout is him being a fucking idiot and calling her a city girl. Bruh,
city girl.
Can you hear that accent? Like, what are you talking about? That
girl
is not.
Well, to be fair, I felt like Kate's accent kind of came and went throughout the film. That was one of my little.
You can hear it. She does not sound like she. I don't care where you think she's from. She does not sound like she is from New York City the whole time. Like, he has a consistent accent the whole fucking time. And I'm like, she doesn't sound that different to you. They're at the fucking rodeo before she's like, I'm from Oklahoma, bitch. And I'm like, how did it take us an hour and 15 minutes to correct this fucker? Like, I just thought it was such a silly oversight of like, that is not her accent. And you're not, Tyler is clearly not this dumb. Okay. He has a degree in meteorology, apparently. So I think he knows better. But I thought it was a funny shtick.
I'm gonna rewatch it though, because I missed that line of dialogue where she says, I'm from Oklahoma, bitch.
That was literally exactly what it was. You don't have to check me. Yeah, you don't need to recon on that one. But yeah, there's just a couple things that I had before we get into the nerd stuff, which I'm super itching to do. Are you ready, or you have more?
That's. I think I've crossed out every
crossed all
note
your goodies?
That I had. Again, I didn't have my notebook with me in the theater, obviously, but I've crossed out everything I got. Let's hear some science.
Let's science. Okay, so obviously my first thought watching this movie was like, this is crazy inaccurate, right? Like, there's got to be so many things wrong with this story because there's no way that some of this is real, right? Well, okay, so I'm going to address them point by point. Can you kill a tornado? The short answer is no.
I was going to assume no.
Right. But, or they would have done it already, right? So this is all built on the NOAA, which, like I said, is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric administration. But the laboratory that would do this kind of study is the National Severe Storms Laboratory. So the NSSL.
NSSL? And, they're in this? Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, they make an appearance. But they have, this concept has been floated in the past because super absorbent polymers can absorb several hundred times their weight in water. So there's all kinds of smaller scale experiments that they've done where these polymers are absorbing a ton of water. And what the reason that this would theoretically work is because what the tornado feeds off of is the warmth and the moisture in the air to give it fuel. Think of that as like the fuel of the tornado, right? If you absorb all the moisture in the air, it can't spin anymore. It just absorbs it and collapses. The problem is twofold. One, it becomes this gloopy, heavy gel that would, yes, weaken the tornado because it's not moisture in a moisture form anymore, but it would potentially fall and do other kinds of damage because it's changing shape essentially into this gel. It also would be an incredible, ridiculous amount of this polymer that would be needed to make this be effective. It just wouldn't work. You cannot get this much volume of this material responsibly, especially to a tornado, in order to get it to collapse, because it's just too much. You just need too much of that material. And they also are worried about other issues coming from actually killing a tornado. They're worried about what are the possible like air imbalances and other consequences that would come from you knocking this out of the air. They're like, ultimately, Mother Nature is trying to respond to something, some kind of imbalance in its own way. That's why this tornado is forming.
Well, that's literally, yeah, like natural disasters. It's in right. the name, right?
Exactly. So what would happen? What would be the unintended consequences of causing this literal air imbalance, moisture imbalance in the air around
the
tornado?
I think you just wrote the sequel to Twister. Just like even more twisters. I don't know what they're gonna
even
call
more
it.
Twisters. Twisters. Yeah, twisters. Just three more S's. Yeah.
Oh no, wait, it's twisters, but with a three where the E is. Twisters.
Yes.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh my god.
We're in business, baby.
Sold. All right. Copyright TM. Next one, tornado fire. Is tornado fire a real
thing? I'm curious about this one because it looked really cool in the movie.
It does look very cool. There are no known cases of tornadoes hitting a refinery or a flammable material of any kind and bursting into flames. However, there are cases of extreme fires having generated massive storm cells and becoming a tornado. So in 2018, in Redding, California, there was a supercell that formed out of an extreme fire and then turned into an EF3 with fire visible at the bottom of the tornado. Yeah.
Can you find
there is,
video?
Yeah, okay. There is video. It's pretty gnarly, but it doesn't quite look like that because it doesn't go up the funnel. It's at the bottom, at the ground mm-hmm. where the fire was, right? So yeah, it's really interesting. But no, there's not... It's not necessarily likely that it would go into a flammable material and catch fire. My guess, and they didn't go into this, is that it's the moisture, right? Like the moisture of the tornado that stops it, right? So anyway, okay. Next thing, the truck that we all know and love in this film, which drills into the ground, super fun, has a roll cage, has the drills built in, has all kinds of firework and cannon accoutrement.
I feel like we're going toward, what's that YouTube series where it's like, how many times would people have actually died in films if it were real life? Like they did one for Home Alone 2, of how many times Harry and Marv would have died if this were real. So mm-hmm. how many times would this truck have died?
Yeah, film? It would have super died immediately is what we have learned. Their storm chasing vehicles actually do exist. They look very different than this. They look like really intensely armored vehicles, and they almost look more like a tubular shell, almost like, think like a submarine cut off to scroll, like roll along the ground, right? And it's got armored exterior, but also bulletproof glass, shatterproof glass. And it has, usually it does have a hydraulic system where it can lower to the ground once it parks so that no wind can get under it. Because that's the thing that like his ram being so high up has so much airflow underneath it, it would immediately get grabbed, right? The one piece of that truck that is accurate and looks very different and dramatic in the film is the drills. They actually do have these spikes or drills that will go into the ground on those armored vehicles. They look very different. They're like straight pointed. It's a whole thing. but they wouldn't, but basically that truck would get snatched up real quick.
Also, can this is something I thought at the end, can those drills penetrate concrete? And if they did penetrate I don't imagine they would drill in. Like, I feel like they would just destroy it and you could still just lift it straight up out of the gravel.
I think it could. I think if you have the right drill, you know, okay, it will do that. Theoretically, I mean, because you've seen, yeah, I mean, even if you think about like road work, they've done that before. And it's not like a jackhammer that just breaks it up. It is like a drill. It's creating a shape, you know. Okay. So, but theirs, like I said, the real ones are quite a bit smaller and like more air, like look almost more like an arrow. Mm-hmm. So it is very different than his design for sure. Also, phased array radar, which is what Storm Parr is trying to do here. Parr, get it? Phased array radar. Is actually...
Oh!
It is a real thing. It is a real thing. Okay. Storm Parr is a real thing. It is way faster than our historical radar that we actually have. It has better resolution and detail. It creates the same number of images in like 2 seconds, I think, to 10 seconds that a normal radar does. And it has a more accurate picture of what's happening in the storm, but it is not in full operation yet. It's not universally used and it cannot fit into a like stem cells. Exactly.
I'm the best student in this class right now. Because I'm your only one.
I was going to say you're the only student in the class. So that would be why.
I'm imagining like you, a college professor, and I raise my hand and go, like stem cells. And you go, okay, sure, Mr.
Sure, Ortiz, Lamar. Yes. Exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Drink your juice box, honey. All right. But yes, it is still in use, but it also cannot fit into a car, which is the whole premise of Storm Parr here, is that you could physically move it and get it closer to a storm. Mm. And you have to actually have it in a physical. It's like a large structure. And so they have them at the moment placed regionally, but they are not mobile at all. And last one, drones. You may recall she was using drones to like check out. Drones are totally real, but are they being used to track storms is the question. And the answer is yes. They are called uncrewed aerial systems, and they are flying near or in tornadoes to measure data, to send that data to forecasters and kind of improve their response time and the forecast of like, is this particular tornado growing or getting smaller? So like we did see that in the film of like, does it feel like it's getting bigger? Does it feel like it's getting smaller? But they also use it retroactively to do damage assessment and try to understand the tornado after the fact of like, what was the pathway? What turned it? What changed it? Like, what did it run into that made it change its path? What did it absorb that made it worse? Like, whatever. All those types of things. And they use a multispectral camera to do that. And they are trying to leverage that as a tool for all kinds of other weather events. So it's not just tornadoes, but it's a big use for tornadoes as well.
Interesting.
And very last little nugget, it's not so much the science of it all, but it's a tip, pro tip for you. Do not hide under an overpass or a bridge. It is a common misconception. That,
yeah, because the concrete will just crush you, right, if it collapses.
And they say that in the film, and I think it feels like it's an intentional PSA, but I will double tap on it. It is very dangerous. It creates like a suction. There's all kinds of things. Mm. You really need to find as sturdy a shelter as you can. If you cannot, or you are driving, hopefully you're not driving because you've had a warning, but if you are driving, it is actually better to stay in the car, buckle your seatbelt, put your head down, and cover your head. If you can get below roadway levels, like a ditch, for example, it is safer to go into the ditch and cover your head in your hands. But going under an overpass is a big no-no, very dangerous, and not at all shocking that they died in this movie because of that. So that's my science for you for today.
I'm not even bullshitting. I feel like you might have saved a life or two today. Like, that's good advice.
I hope so, because they do tease it a little, but I just want to give some more detail. Yeah.
That was awesome. My only call out, this kind of ties into science, and I'll tell you why. So I kept thinking that one actor in this looked familiar, and I couldn't place where he was. So the scientist who is riding in the caravan for Tyler's team, the black guy with the glasses and kind of the bucket hat, kind of he's a science guy. He's kind of a dork, but he's lovable. Mm-hmm. I was like, who is that? So his name, the actor's name, is Tunde Adebimpe. He is the lead singer of a band that I really like called TV on the Radio. So they've been around since like the mid-aughts. They make this, I don't know who I would even compare them to. They're kind of like a Radiohead, like electronic-y rock, mellow sometimes, heavy sometimes. And they have a banger album that is called Dear Science. So there's a little bit of science from my end as well.
I love the extra nerddom. Speaking of cameos, I will give us one last cameo that we've neglected to mention and I feel like is offensive. Mr. James Paxton makes an appearance here, son of Bill Paxton.
Who does he play?
He's a minor character in the rodeo-ish scene, like the hotel after the rodeo where they're kind of escaping. He's the guy, I believe he has long hair, if I recall correctly. And he's like the angry guest who's like just wants to get in. I think it's like AC. I don't remember.
So
anyway,
his character dies.
So he was there as an homage to Bill Paxton, and if y'all didn't know, Bill Paxton was universally beloved after the first Twister. There was actually a lot of tributes to him in the area by storm chasers who really like treated him as one of their own. So I thought it was cool that they included his son in this too.
Also aliens,
obviously.
Game over, man. Game over. Maybe what'd you say his name was? What Paxton?
James Paxton.
Maybe he's an alien Romulus. We haven't seen that one yet. So
it's true. It's not on my list, but you let me know. All right, homies. Well, we gave you a lot today, including some science. There will be a pop quiz on the socials later. No, I'm just kidding. They're wrong. But thank you for joining us. And
as always, follow us on our socials at We Drink and We Watch Things, Instagram, TikTok. You can also email us at WeDrinkAndWeWatchThingsPod@gmail.com. Keep an eye out because we have our 1 year anniversary episode coming up in October, and we'll be looking for a little bit of feedback from y'all on what you've liked this first year, what you've learned this first year, what you've hated this first year. Like, get rid of Lamar. Put somebody else on this fucking show. You know? So any of that stuff
science,
is great.
Obviously. I know you want more science from Mackenzie, so feel free to drop that.
I learned stuff today, so I like this scientific viewpoint on films. Yeah.
Yay. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Like we said, come back next week when we check out our back to school series, which is going to kick off with The Breakfast Club.
I love breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day. And I love clubs. I'd love to be in
breakfast,
one someday.
Clubs. Check. Oh, we'll make up. This is your club now. This is your club. We drink and we watch things. The club.
All two of us. Am I on the council? If you're the president, can I be like treasurer or something?
I think you would be like historian, perhaps, would be the position, you know?
And then work my way up from there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like VP, slowly, all right, but surely. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.